The sweet sound of sports you love from Sling. The collide of football pads. The squeak of shoes on a basketball court. The crack of the bat on a home run. The slice of skates cutting across the ice. But what about this one? That's the sound of all the sports you love, all at once. Starting at $40 a month. Experience it all live with Sling. Sling.
Hulu is coming in hot this month with new shows, new movies, and all new seasons of your faves. Don't miss FX's Clipped, the story of one NBA team's racial reckoning, starring Lawrence Fishburne. Stream a new season of Shoresy, the underdog hockey comedy that might just knock your teeth out. Then catch the high-speed drama Ferrari, starring Adam Driver and Penelope Cruz. Kick your streaming into high gear this month with so much new stuff to watch on Hulu.
When raising a Pacifico beer with friends you just met turns into hitting up their friend's local art show, getting inspired to create something together, and painting your first mural, you found what was waiting for you. Pacifico. Life's waiting. 21 plus only. Discover responsibly. Pacifico Clara Beer. Imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Looking for a fun way to win 25 times your money this football and basketball season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of stats, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and injury insurance on your picks are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million players who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/play100 and use code play100. That's code play100 at prizepicks.com/play100 for a first deposit match up to $100. Prize Picks, daily fantasy sports made easy.
Hello, this is international football commentator Derek Ray, and you're listening to the Ranks FC podcast.
Hello, Rank Squad, and welcome to Ranks FC. It's your favourite football podcast, back for another week. My name is Jack Collins, and I'll be your host today. And I'm looking forward to talking through some of the most exciting things left in this season across Europe. Joining me, as ever, is the Rank God, Mr. Sam Tai. How you doing, mate?
Yeah, good, mate. It's about that time of the season, isn't it? Oh, only about 6 weeks left. I was looking at the topic for this week. I was trying to work out how many games are left to be played? How long have we got left to do it? And my conclusion is there's an awful lot to get done. Really quite a lot of games to squeeze into this 5 to 6 week period. So let's set the table for everyone today.
Yeah, there's loads to get through. Loads to get through. And a man who's looking forward to getting through all of it as well. So our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones. How you doing, mate?
Hello, mate. Yeah, I'm good. I'll tell you what, I've got a little bit of a gibberish here. And what it is it's Liverpool's results from recently. Liverpool's results from recently is a gibberish ranking in itself. They've gone from 7-0 Man United to 4-1 defeat to Man City. It was 6-1 week win over Leeds. The space of like 5 weeks or something. Absolute nonsense. Like, this really is the season that makes no sense, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. And to be honest, that's a nice segue because I want to take us into things we love. And I want to start with a brief look at what happened this weekend for teams at the top of tables, because it's been a really bad weekend for league leaders, unless you're in France or the Netherlands. Those are my big takeaways, because in the top tiers, Benfica lost to Chaves. Bayern drew with Hoffenheim. Napoli drew with Verona. Arsenal drew with West Ham. And Barcelona drew with Getafe. Now, five of the top seven not winning on a weekend is an acca-buster at the best of times, isn't it? But it seems a bit strange. But it's not only in the top tiers, because you actually drop this down to the second tiers and you look at these ones. You Burnley draw with Reading. Eibar lost to Albacete, Frosinone drew with Cagliari, and Darmstadt lost to Fortuna Düsseldorf. So across the top two tiers in five countries, in Portugal, in Germany, in Italy, England and Spain, one team won. One of the 10 sides, top of those 10 leagues, won this weekend. That is nuts. It's absolutely nuts weekend. And obviously, like, it's fun and I love it because it's bizarre. And it's one of those things that you look at and you go, well, it opens things up. And actually, obviously, we're going to be talking about endings of the season today. We're going to be talking about different things. And actually, these kind of results make it all a bit more interesting. They make it all a bit more nuts at the top and the sharp end of the season. And I find it incredibly intriguing as to how that can happen. And look, it's not just in the very top of tables. We saw teams in second dropping points. We saw the teams cut out for the race in Spain's top four. Drop both two of three drop points this weekend as well. So it's been a kind of mad weekend all round. But I suppose it's to do with the idea of burnout. It's to do with the idea of teams really starting to hit a wall, I think, physically, especially the teams who have been dominant throughout this season and the teams who've had a lot of players who went away to World Cup. So it's nothing necessarily to like in that regard. But what I do like about it is that it's just very, very unpredictable at the moment.
Well, yeah, two of the Champions League quarterfinalists, so two of eight, won a game. Everybody else drew or lost. And that's another thing to add to the list. It's, you know, you have to take care of yourselves because you've got three games in 8 days. And yes, it's the sticky end of the season, but also how many teams, you know, rotated over the course of the weekend in order to make sure that they were fresh for Tuesday and Wednesday. To my delight, and I texted the boys this and I got almost nothing in reply. I was really sad about it. Diego Demme started for Napoli, which in this house is a holiday day. Like, yeah, it's like a holy ceremony for Diego Demme to get a game of foot. And these two didn't care, obviously, but I've been talking about Diego Demme for years. And, you know, that's how much Napoli didn't care about the weekend. They started Diego Demme, bless his soul.
Yeah. What a player. Okie dokie. Well, no, yeah, apologies. It was. I know it was exciting, but there was lots of things going on. I didn't get much response on my Iñaki scoring a goal either. So we are where we are.
Well, we just assumed it would be ruled out by VAR.
Well, indeed, it probably should have been. Let's go to your thing we love, Sam.
Yeah, so what I loved this weekend was Roma's wonderful show of support for Lorenzo Pellegrini on Sunday. This was the Sunday night game, so right towards the end of the footballing weekend. And it produced one of the loveliest moments. Roma played Udinese on Sunday. They won 3-0. It was not an easy game. The scoreline is pretty deceptive. They really had to grind through it. It was quite difficult at points. Now, the context for this is that 3 days earlier, they played against Feyenoord in the Europa League quarterfinal first leg, and they lost. They lost 1-0. And when the score was at 0-0, they missed a penalty. And Pellegrini, the captain of the club, was the one that missed it. Pretty shaken up by it. And it was a moment in that game, very tense scenario where obviously it can shape the game and it can go so differently. So fast forward to Sunday, 3 days later, Roma and Pellegrini walk out of the Olympico and there's a banner held aloft in the stands that reads, roughly translated, "In good times and bad, the captain remains as such." And it's a lovely show of support. He stepped out onto the pitch. He saw it. There's a picture of him looking at it and reading it. He took it in, and, you know, this was a game where Pellegrini actually was taken off penalty duty. Roma got a penalty and he did not take it. It was given to Brian Cristante, who missed.
Roma are cursed on the spot, aren't they?
But fortunately, the rebound fell to Eduardo Bove, who did really well to control like a rapid ball into his feet and slotted it home. And it was okay. And then Pellegrini went on to score. He scored the second goal. Some good work from one of my favourite players, Andrea Belotti, teed up Pellegrini and he scored a nice, cool finish. And then, you know, 90 minutes, it's 2-0. It ends up 3-0. Pellegrini's taken off and he gets, you know, a standing ovation, a round of applause and a round of chants from the crowd. Now, it's just this might seem pretty standard, but let's be honest, the general reaction to a critical penalty miss in 2022 and 2023 hasn't tended to be this kind of show of support. It's tended to be something completely in the opposite direction and genuinely quite harmful. So thank you to Roma and thank you to their fans for showing appreciation and respect to their captain and supporting him in good times and bad. He repaid you with a goal and all to play for in the second leg on Thursday against Feyenoord. Maybe you'll go through.
Very wholesome. I like that.
It was very nice. It was a very lovely banner. Roma have history of making nice banners, but this one particularly lovely, I thought. So fair play to you, Sam. Right, let's go to yours, DJ. What you got for me?
Yeah, I'm crossing over to MLS. And I'm not sure this one is as nice, but I loved it. What I loved is that LAFC went to LA Galaxy this weekend and took the place over. So for the first time, LAFC actually won a game at Galaxy. Carlos Vela scored twice and helped them to a 3-2 win. Great game. Oof. And it's been a great start to the season, to be honest. And undefeated into the CONCACAF Champions League semi-final. Like, things are going well for LAFC, not going as well for Galaxy, who are on the complete flip of that. And we knew that coming into the game. But what I loved was, obviously, I've got a soft spot, let's say, for LAFC. And they took the place over, lads. Like, beyond their actual allocation, they had fans all over the stadium, groups of fans in Galaxy sections of the ground, jumping around, chanting, taking this rivalry to a new level. Now, would I be happy with this as a Galaxy fan? This would not be in things I love, obviously. Unless it really is rubbing salt in the wounds, isn't it? At a time when Galaxy are kind of on the floor and they want to change the hierarchy and all sorts there at the moment, things are so bad. But this is what rivalries are all about. Like, you push the boundaries, you wind each other up. I don't think there was any like violence or anything involved. Like, you get in rivalries in English football when people can't handle things. Like, in English football, you would never be able to do this. Like, it's completely off limits for other fans to come into our sections and show any support for the other team. You are immediately thrown out or punched, one or the other. Like, it's just
often
not,
both.
Yeah, often both. It used to happen, but it doesn't happen at all anymore. And it did happen here, and it's just not something you see. And as I say, like, there were swathes of them all over the place inside the stadium. There are some good videos of it on LAFC social accounts too. And it was fun to see. It was fun to see all those fans. There were some cheeky videos of them too. Like, you know, someone gone in with like dressed differently and then got into the stadium. They're like taking off their clothes and they've got LAFC shirts underneath and they're all starting to chant and join in with the official away section. But yeah, LAFC absolutely flying right now on and off the pitch. And also, let's remember, El Tráfico, one of the best rivalries in football. And yes, MLS does count when it comes to that.
Of course, yeah.
Oh, it was a good weekend for MLS rated rivalries. The two brightest sparks in the cupboard, if you will. The two brightest stars in the sky in terms of MLS rivalries, in terms of we had both El Tráfico and, well, two-thirds of the Cascadia Cup in Portland Timbers against Seattle Sounders. Yeah. So it was a good weekend for that in that regard. And two good games as well in those two rivalry games.
Right, depends who you support on the Portland Seattle side of things, but I think for everybody involved,
for the neutral,
yeah, the latest El Tráfico was genuinely sensational. And Dean, the scenes inside the stadium were cool. Some of the pre-match stuff was really cool as well, the choreographed and coordinated chanting and singing, and like the march they did towards the stadium.
The march was cool, yeah.
The march was really, really cool. A lot of it feels. That felt very German football. German away fans rocking up and being like getting a police escort to the Emirates or something like that. You know, they're taking little elements from European football here and there and taking the best of it, really.
Yeah,
and it's lovely to see.
Agree.
Right, that's all we've got time for things that we love. We'll be back after the break with our main segment. We'll be talking about some of the most exciting finishes in this European season. We're going to be talking about title races, about battles for Europe as well. It's all in this next segment. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC, where it's time for our main segment. I'm just going to hand the floor to Mr. Sam Tye to set the table.
Thank you, mate. Yes, as we mentioned at the top of the show, we've reached the business end of the season. There's lots to be decided. We thought we'd try and set the table for people and try and direct some eyes, because there's an awful lot to look at. And sometimes it can be tough to work out what exactly you should be watching. So I've ranked the top five most exciting season-ending storylines for this campaign. And a little caveat to start with, I'm going to focus on the good. So this is all title races and European pushes, nice. Because that's obviously where the happy times are. Exciting is a subjective term when it comes to relegation. If you're in it, it's the worst thing in the world. If you're not, it's absolutely fascinating. So let's leave that aside for one moment and let's focus on who can qualify for Europe and who can haul in some silverware.
Lovely. Excellent. Let's get stuck into it, shall we?
Okay, so at number five, I'm going to present to you Spain's European race. This is interesting because a lot of the European races out there, and we'll get to one other at least, it kind of feels like it could be anyone between six teams, you know, for those like Europa League spots and Conference League spots and maybe that last Champions League spot. In Spain, it kind of feels like there's this block of four teams who are pretty much set for it. It just depends on which order they come in. And it does rely on Real Madrid winning the Copa del Rey. Because if Real Madrid win the Copa del Rey, seventh place in La Liga will receive Conference League football, five and six Europa League, obviously fourth goes to the Champions League. If Osasuna create one of the greatest upsets of our times, then if you finish in seventh in La Liga, well, that's bad news for you. So in this little cluster of teams, you know, we're going to put Barcelona, Real Madrid and Atletico aside because they are well clear of this. Atleti are third and they're 9 points clear of fourth. So I think we can pretty much put a fork in that one. If you're in Madrid, you'll be very interested to see who out of Atleti and Real actually finish second. But for the purposes of this argument, we're going to go 9 points south to Real Sociedad in fourth, who just lost the Basque derby to Athletic Club in seventh. And then wedged between them, Betis, who are three or fourth, and Villarreal, who are four or fourth. All of them should get Europe, as long as Real Madrid do their job. But there are nine games left here. They've all got nine games left. That seems like a lot of games, given the season's supposed to finish next month, doesn't it? Mm. And they've all got to play each other, basically. I'm trying to look at the fixtures. I'm trying to figure out who's got the horrible run and who's got the nice run in. Truth be told, I think they've all got really nasty fixture lists. They're almost all playing each other. They've all got at least a game or two against the top three. Real Sociedad have to play all three of them. And they've all got at least a couple of games against teams who are really scrapping down there. You know, some of them have got to play Valencia, for example, who are just going to be fighting tooth and nail, we hope, anyway. And then all of them have got at least one trap game. And by that, I mean like someone like Celta Vigo, who could definitely just turn up and win and just beat anyone on their day. So, do you want to do some predictions as we go through? Do you want to see what we think? I mean, this one feels really tough.
This is tough.
But I don't think Real Sociedad are going to hang on to fourth. I think playing all three of the big three is really nasty. And they haven't been great over the last couple of months. And I just wonder, really, if they might slip out of those Champions League spots. And someone like Real Betis, who when they've had 11 men on the pitch, Jack, have done a pretty good job of just beating the teams that they're supposed to beat. Like, they never win against the top teams, but they usually beat the others as long as they can control themselves. And that should be a recipe for success.
They can't control themselves. Like, it's incredibly frustrating. Like, you look at the weekend before and, you know, obviously Betis lost to Atleti the week before, 2 weeks ago. And we were like, okay, we could probably live with that. The fact that Villarreal beat Real Sociedad on that same weekend felt like it was still an opportunity. Yes, it was an opportunity missed, and Betis probably deserved a point, I think, out of the Atleti game. But you kind of shrug. You go, it's all right. We've got Cadiz at home next. Lost 2-0. Two players sent off. Mm. Like, what are you doing? Stop it. Like, stop it immediately. It's so incredibly frustrating. And I tweeted at the time, they're like, Betis's ability to shoot themselves in the foot is unparalleled in world football. And I got a couple of responses, mostly from Fulham fans, saying this feels very familiar. And I was like, yeah, no, I get it. I'm well aware of the kind of similarities in some regards. But that in particular, I was like, what are you doing? So I can look at this running and think, yeah, reasonable. I think obviously playing Real Sociedad at the Villamarín should be an advantage. I think Betis probably have the softest run-in of the lot. It doesn't mean it's soft, but I think it's the softest of anybody's. That Real Sociedad game, and then they go away to Camp Nou to play Barcelona, the two kind of big ones that stand out. And then there's the derby, but Sevilla are sort of here, there and everywhere, so I'm not quite sure what to make of that. Apart from that, it feels winnable. And so when you look at that, you think, okay, if you win all those games bar three, I think Betis will come fourth. But equally, I just don't trust them to win all the games that they're supposed to win, because they're undoubtedly someone will get a 4-game suspension for punching someone in the face. So it's just like, I don't know. Betis I love deeply, but they are just so incredibly frustrating that I don't know what to make of them. Part of me thinks that Quique Setién's Villarreal might be the team that can calm themselves into this kind of this race. But then again, I don't really trust them either.
They've got quite a few mid-table teams, haven't they? And like, we're hitting that stage now where you start to play against teams that have nothing to play for. So like, at a quick glance, their fixture list doesn't look horrendous, to be fair. And that's what now becomes key. It's like, at a table, it might look like playing someone 10th is harder than playing someone down the bottom, but actually it might not be. It might be that they've lost all that motivation in their season. So those are the little factors that we've got to put in here.
Yeah, well, I mean, despite what Jack says, and he's absolutely right, of course, I'm going to say that I reckon Betis will nick fourth. I actually think Real Sociedad might drop down to sixth with Villarreal jumping into fifth. I think Athletic will finish seventh. They're 4 points off sixth. And, you know, the goal scoring concerns that have plagued the season, like, I'm not expecting them to just magically get better over the course of the last 9 games. So I'm going to stick Athletic in seventh. And I'm just going to hope, no offence, Osasuna, that Real Madrid do the business. And that brings Athletic into European football next season.
I can see you coming from. I think there's a chance. Villarreal are one of those sides that can either, as Dean says, they could either go on a 6-game winning run now, or they could just drop loads of points. And then by the time Athletic actually come to Villarreal, I think in 3-4 weeks' time, they could be in striking distance. And so that kind of intrigues me a little bit. But I'm with you in that. I think that Athletic will come seventh. I hope Betis come fourth. But then again, I have, part of me is like, I don't think Betis are quite ready for the Champions League yet. And I think that they could have another good run at the Europa League next season if fixtures fall their way. So who knows? But it's going to be very intriguing in Spain nonetheless. Sam, shall we head onwards?
Yeah, okay. So at number four, I've got the Bundesliga title race. And given that this is legitimately a title race, and you look at the table and you look at the situation, and it is close up there, you know, there's a part of me that the instinct was that this should be higher in the list. But I'll tell you in a little while why I ended up placing it a little bit lower than maybe some people expected. But for those of you that aren't looking or aren't paying attention, we do legitimately have a title race. There are just 2 points separating Bayern and Dortmund, and there are only 6 games remaining. So this is quite interesting. They do not play each other, which is a huge advantage to Dortmund, because all they do is lose to Bayern. Like, if they had a game against Bayern left, that would not be an opportunity.
Well, they already did, and that's why they're not top at the moment, right?
Yeah. They always lose, basically. Particularly at the Allianz, they usually lose. They concede like 4, but the games against Bayern are too tough for them. Their better hope is to try and outlast them over a 6-game stretch. So that's the opportunity that they have. Whether or not you trust them to do that, given that they just slipped up at the weekend in quite remarkable fashion, really, against one of the worst teams in the league in Stuttgart, I don't know. But the brilliant thing about this is that Bayern have also been really mixed lately. You know, Thomas Tuchel has come in, they've made a managerial switch. There's no way he's had the effect that they were hoping. You know, we put the Champions League aside for one moment, and we recorded midweek, so again, we don't really know what happens there. But Bayern held at the weekend, not been that convincing over the course of Tuchel's short tenure so far. Although they've only really got one genuinely tough game, I think, in their fixture list, which is RB Leipzig, and they play them at home. So advantage Bayern there in terms of points. Advantage, I think, Bayern in terms of fixtures. Dortmund actually have to play Eintracht Frankfurt, Wolfsburg and Gladbach. So no one as good as Leipzig, but three teams there that are definitely top half material and three teams that are going to be really hard to beat.
Yeah, I think the kind of the truth of this is maybe revealed in what happened at the weekend, though, rather than actually who they have to play, is that they can both drop points to teams that they're not expecting to drop points to. And that's, you know, Dortmund at the weekend will be absolutely sickened. You know, the fact that not only did they manage to throw away a 2-0 lead to a team with 10 men, they then went 3-2 up in injury time and conceded a 97th-minute equaliser against a team who are in scrapping for their lives at the bottom of the table in Stuttgart. And then you kind of look at what happened with Bayern, and they lost to Hoffenheim, who are not quite as in dire straits as... They didn't lose, they drew with Hoffenheim, sorry. They're not quite as in dire straits as Stuttgart are, but are still down there towards the bottom of this table. And you're kind of looking at it going, well, okay, it's all well and good talking about the difficult games that both of them have left. But if they're not winning those kind of games, then what do we take out of this? Because it does feel like neither are particularly watertight, cohesive.
I mean, I'm just done with Dortmund, to be honest. Like, I love watching them. If I was German and I moved to Germany, I'd probably adopt them as my team because it's fun and it's a great place to go and watch football. But just can't trust them at all. And Bayern, you can doubt them. Definitely, there's issues there at the moment. There's bound to be issues if you're punching each other in the face. But I still think even with issues like Mane and Sané. Just saying those two names alone tells me why I would give Bayern Munich the edge. Like that, they've got players like Mane and Sané. Like they've got unbelievable talent. Don't get me wrong, Dortmund, great team, but no, that for me that defeat to Bayern was really telling.
Yeah, always is, unfortunately. So look, the reason I put them, you know, lower down in fourth, I feel like maybe I'm emotionally guarding myself a little bit. I don't want to get too excited at the prospect as a neutral. Well, they say neutral. I always want Dortmund to win the title.
We're not neutral at all. We never support Bayern.
Of course, yeah. And for Bayern fans listening, it must be really annoying. And I'm sorry, but like, obviously, if you win 10 titles in a row, we do want you to lose at one point. And that is the situation. So guarding myself a little bit, don't really have the faith in Dortmund because they never really get it over the line. But the reality is that this is right in the balance with six games to go. There is a 2-point gap. Like, this is possible. I don't think we thought we'd be here. But we are.
Yeah, I mean, I think John McKenzie tweeted at some point, a friend of the pod, over the last few weeks saying humanity has moved past the need for Borussia Dortmund. And it did make me laugh. I was watching it and going, they can't throw this away. Like, even Dortmund can't throw this away. And they managed to. And if it wasn't so heartbreaking, it would genuinely be comical.
Yeah.
That's where I'm at with it. Like, it's one of those laugh or cry moments because we have just got to the point where it's so painfully predictable what's going to happen. And yet it hurts nonetheless.
It does. It does indeed. So they're down in fourth. They're down in fourth. Guess my expectations are set there. I'll move on to number three. This is very interesting. It's not the most exciting. Smack bang in the middle of the ranking, but it's very interesting. This is the Premier League European run-in. It spans three competitions and it includes at least five, maybe six teams here who are in the balance. I've seen Dean Jones has just activated focus mode. He's just put his hands together and he's leant forward to look directly at me. I've piqued Dean Jones's interest as we talk about the Premier League European running. We start at Liverpool down in eighth, who've just won 6-1. They're in this fight. You know, some people have probably discounted them a little bit, but every now and then they absolutely destroy someone and remind you what they're capable of. Brighton in seventh, so tough to gauge, as we keep saying, because after this weekend, they'll have three games in hand because they're still in the FA Cup. And they're just below Villa, who are in sixth, who have surged upwards, but will have played three more games than Brighton. Like, how do you gauge these teams? Spurs are in fifth and they look like a complete mess. I'd say they're more likely to drop further than climb, but you never know. They have Harry Kane and Son. Newcastle have been in the top four all year, as have United. It's crunch time now, and the pressure will tell. Newcastle's players generally, I don't think, are used to being in this kind of... Well, Newcastle's a club aren't used to being in this situation, and we'll see how the pressure tells. And United have a billion players injured, and they're still in two cups. How do you manage the fixture list? It's very, very interesting, guys. And the games played are all different. The competitions they're all in, still in, are all different. I don't know what to make of this one. I've seen people count Liverpool out. I've seen people suggest Villa are the top four contender. The takes on this race are wild.
Yeah, they definitely are, aren't they? Yeah, it's impossible. It's literally impossible to predict. Like, anyone that gets this right is just very good at guessing, because that's all it is. It's a guess. You can't make a measured prediction on this, because, as you say, it's all over the place. You've got some teams in loads of competitions, and some teams in no competitions, like Liverpool. So, in reality, Liverpool, on the back of a 6-1 win, should now be able to totally focus on their final eight games of the season and get the job done and actually finish with a Champions League spot, like, or at least a European spot, but potentially a Champions League spot, which hasn't been in their grasp for a long time.
They're 9 points off Newcastle in fourth.
But we don't know what's going to happen to Newcastle now. They've just been battered by Aston Villa. We don't know what this team's makeup is. Obviously, we've seen for 29 games a team that has been able to actually respond to some adversity. There was definitely a wobble that they had, and they bounced back from it. Can they do it again? 3-0 defeat? Can they come back again? Maybe, but I don't know. If Liverpool, if they can find some consistency right on this home straight, then they can really arrow in on that. Brighton, as you say, they've got a cup semi-final that has the capability of sending you on a wobble. That's always a dangerous place to be, but a nice one for Brighton, and they should just enjoy this moment. Like, whatever happens, happens from here. You've got to, like, just enjoy these moments as a club like that. You know, similar to sort of Fulham, if they were in that position, you've just got to enjoy it. You don't expect to be to have these moments. Aston Villa, unbelievable rise. Like, what Emery's produced is like, again, just a moment to enjoy. This wasn't expected when he came in. If you can clinch something, then great. And then you've got the flip of that with Tottenham and Man United, who could just completely fall apart here. And Tottenham probably got the most potential to do that, because the self-doubt in that team is absolutely insane. Like, you can see it. The stages of a game when you're watching Tottenham is just... It's like going to the theatre. You know what's going to happen, but you're just going to see how the actors are going to pull it off. And it's just like... They start off, everyone's pumped, like, okay, you've had a good team talk, we've worked all week, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. That's 10, 15 minutes, bang on it, like, good structure, good pace to the game, maybe score a goal. And then slowly, little things don't come right, and you start to retract a little bit, and then you start arguing a little bit, and then Romero tries, like, a step over in the far corner, or... You know, somebody else makes an error and the crowd are like, what are you doing, mate? They start turning on each other. Then Davinson Sanchez is being booed by his own team. People are starting to throw all sorts of insults at Pedro Porro, saying he's not a good footballer. Romero's useless. Harry Kane standing there in total bewilderment, hasn't touched the ball for about 25 minutes. It's utter madness. It's complete madness. But they also have the capability to say to win games like... occasionally, that get them over the line. I got absolutely no idea, mate. This is, again, going all the way back to that rant I had about Liverpool and Man United and Barcelona and Real Madrid. Now football's lost its head. It really has.
Yeah, no, I think it's a fair point. Like, there's plenty of wisdom in the madness of that rant, and I appreciate it nonetheless.
It's aging quite well, isn't it?
I enjoy the play-by-play of Tottenham's games, by the way. Spot on. All you were missing was Pierre-Emile Højbjerg giving the ball away outside of his own box for no reason.
And
does happen. But there's loads of really important games between all of the teams that I've just talked about that are obviously going to have a big hand in shaping this. Like, Villa basically play all of the top 10, more or less. So that's important. But starting this weekend, Newcastle host Spurs. So Newcastle's bounce back opportunity is Tottenham. That's fourth versus fifth. Big. And then Spurs midweek host Man United. And then the following weekend, they go to Anfield. So an 8-day stretch for Tottenham here, after what happened at the weekend, is Newcastle, Man United, Liverpool away. On the same day as that third game, Villa go to Old Trafford. In early May, Villa play Spurs, and then Villa go to Anfield, and then they host Brighton on the final day. So, interesting. Momentum, obviously, is going to be absolutely huge here, and confidence is huge too. But this little gauntlet of fixtures here for Spurs, given where they are and how they look so fragile, I look at these next three and I wonder, you could lose all three of those. Like, that's very possible. And if you lose three on the bounce, or say you only took a point or two from the next nine, this table would start to look very scary for Tottenham, I think, because Liverpool will want to surge upwards and Villa will be applying pressure. And if Spurs go and lose to United and Newcastle, they'll obviously be basically 6 points further adrift of fourth. And it will leave them in a really, really sticky scenario.
Yeah. I also think that you've got to focus on the idea that Brighton will be looking at it going, yeah, okay, we've got two games in hand to fire ourselves into the European places. There are also two games at Wembley away from securing themselves a European place via the FA Cup.
Yeah.
And that could make things very, very interesting in terms of how it was. Because if Brighton were to win the FA Cup and then finish seventh, the team in sixth would go into the Conference League just to really, you know, throw the cat amongst the pigeons, right?
Yeah.
And then there's also the idea that if teams win in the Europa League and in the Champions League, I mean, it's looking incredibly unlikely, but if those things happen as well, then there's more question marks over who goes where, depending on where people finish. So it's chaos and it's loads of fun. And I'm really excited about seeing how this pans out. Two months ago, I think we were looking at it and going, Fulham sneak seventh. And I think that both Dean and I said that it was incredibly unlikely, but that we'd take it as it comes. And look, circumstances have meant that is now out of the question as far as I'm concerned. But it's fun to be in it, having a say in the conversation.
Yeah.
Fulham play a lot of these teams as well. You know, Villa Fulham have to go to Villa Park in midweek and then go to Anfield. There's a lot of kind of spoiler games that Fulham have in the tank left towards the end of this season. I think it's going to be Manchester United on the final day with Alexander Mitrovic back from that ban that he got at Old Trafford, and United with about three players left, I think, at that point, will be quite the occasion, you'd imagine.
Well, look, as we've gone through, we've tried to predict, and Dean's right, it's impossible, but I'm obligated to give it a stab. I think United, with their points cushion, will be able to secure a top four finish, regardless of how many more bodies drop. And I think Newcastle will probably stave it off and finish fourth. I think they'll secure it. It's Tottenham that I think are going to drop. I think Tottenham could legitimately drop down to eighth. Like, they need to react so incredibly well and they've got three really tough games in the space of 8 days or so to do so. I think Liverpool are going to surge upwards, and then it's a case of Villa or Brighton. And if it comes down to it, I'd back Villa to beat Brighton at home on the final day. It just depends on those games in hand. But I think I'm going to go for United 3, Newcastle 4, Liverpool 5, Villa 6, Brighton 7, which puts Spurs in 8th.
I'm also going to put Brighton in 7th, but I think they're going to win the FA Cup, which means that Villa in 6th are going to end up in the Conference League. That's generally what I think is going to happen.
I don't think they'd mind.
I don't think they'd mind either, but I think they'd be like, oh God, like, we just go all the way here.
Also, Unai Emery's charm, does it extend to the sister competition?
Well, he got Villarreal through the groups, didn't he, before he left for Villa. So we have no evidence to suggest that Emery's charm does not affect the Europa twins in the same way that it affected Europa. So I'm going to say that yes, it would, yeah.
Okay, well, then they'll be happy with that.
Cameron Archer, 7 goals in Europe next season. Look forward to seeing it. Right, let's move on to number two, shall we?
Okay, number two is still in the Premier League. We're going to stay there and we're going to look slightly further upwards to the title race. And we are basically back at it again, gentlemen. Manchester City against another team. It's usually Liverpool, but this time it's Arsenal. And I'm proud to say that we all called this in August, didn't we?
Yeah. We absolutely nailed it.
No doubt.
We all knew this would happen. Next Wednesday, the two meet. It's the game that we've been looking forward to since December. I don't know. We've been looking forward to this one. They meet next Wednesday. It's going to be, I think, potentially a bit of an all-timer. It goes a hell of a long way to shaping the title. Arsenal having just obviously dropped some points and showing slight frailties, the pressure is now on. They're on 74 and 70 points, respectively. City have the game in hand. They're still in two cup competitions. But do we really think that that matters? They just seem a bit juggernauty, don't they, when it comes to this stage of the season, regardless of what's on the plate.
Yeah, it's not pretty, is it? You'd imagine City go on and win every game, but it hasn't been as clear as that. I think in general, and I know we're getting to the point in the season where City do just turn this tap on and it seems to just flow. But I think City have been at points less convincing than they have been over the last couple of years throughout this season. Mm-hmm. But the version and the iteration of City that we're seeing right now is amongst the best versions of them I think we've seen in a long, long time.
Yes, I think I'd agree with that. And it's the old Dean Jones argument, isn't it? It's like you want proof of concept. Dean has always favoured City in this title race because he's seen City go through one of these gauntlets or two of these gauntlets before and win. He's seen them, you know, stave off Liverpool over 14 games and win 14 games in a row. And he's like, well, I have faith in that. You know, I have faith in that over a maybe, over a possibility. And it's looking like a good argument, Dean.
Yeah, look, I mean, I'm a bit annoyed at myself because I started to believe in Arsenal. Anyone that listens to Patreon would have heard me on Friday singing their praises and expecting them to absolutely smash West Ham. And they could and probably should have, but they didn't. And then this is where you have to start questioning a team. I mean, you've got to be quite careful with it because this is a team that never expected to be in this position. So, you know, I've seen a lot of Arsenal fans, you know, Arsenal Fan TV is back with a vengeance, I noticed, in the last week or so. And there's the same old faces that they roll out, having a dig at Arteta for his tactical decisions, having a digging out a player here and there. It's like, mate, like, get a grip. Arsenal fan, if you're an Arsenal fan that's digging out this team right now, get a grip, because you've just watched a season unfold that you never saw coming. They're hitting levels that we didn't know they had. And it's been an unbelievable season to go toe-to-toe with Man City for even this long. And you're still going to be in it next week, go into their stadium with a chance to actually keep your neck just ahead of them in this race. Like, you've got to go in a one-off match at the Etihad and at least not lose it. And you can do that. Like, this team is capable of that. So, like, I'm very cautious here about digging out Arsenal too much. But, yeah, it is starting to show that pedigree counts for a lot. And Arsenal starting to wobble at the worst possible time.
Do you really think this is a must not lose, though? I think the nature of this game has changed. I think it's verging towards must win for Arsenal.
I mean, I think it's a must. I'm being polite here.
I think 3 weeks ago it was a must not lose. It's like, this game's on the horizon, but as long as you keep winning, Arsenal, and don't lose that game, you're okay.
I got a slightly different agree on that, in that I think if Arsenal would get out of this with a point, it would completely shift the momentum again. And actually, I think that momentum might dig in that regard. I think at the moment, the momentum seems like it's sliding, and that's fine. Well, it's not fine if you're trying to win the title, but it is what it is. I think that a point at City, especially if they came from behind to win a point, and I know that's slightly different in terms of you're talking about game states and all of that, but if they came from behind to win a point, I think that this would reverse the momentum slide for Arsenal. And then I think it would be very interesting going into the end of this season.
I don't know. I mean, Arsenal's three games on the back of that. Chelsea, fair enough. That's probably easy these days. Newcastle, Brighton, like that. This is a tough spell of fixtures for them. And I just think, like, Man City, okay, if they don't get a positive result against Arsenal, what have they got next? Fulham, West Ham, Leeds.
No Everton. Easy games at Craven Cottage, mate.
Fulham, West Ham, Leeds and Everton. Like, that is 12 points out of 12, like, with their eyes closed. Like, that's the problem there. That's the problem. And they will react and they'll get that done. Like, Haaland goes into beast mode, whatever happens. Whereas Arsenal, I don't know with those fixtures, to be honest. I really don't know that, apart from I would expect them to beat Chelsea at home. Newcastle away, Brighton at home. I can't tell you that Arsenal, on an expected level, even get 6 points out of those two matches.
Well, yeah, I think it's a must-win for Arsenal in midweek. They'll be fine on Friday, Southampton at home. Nice tonic for the recent disappointment, you'd say. So they can obviously go back into City, probably in winning ways. But Yeah, I think they have to win that game, and I don't think they'll do it. And it's going to give City the advantage. So my prediction would be that City, they do it again. You know, they do what they've done to Liverpool, and yep. It sucks for Arsenal, but they can still be proud of it.
If yeah. Arsenal draw that game, I still remain faithful. I'm going to remain faithful to the tide turning.
Well, you're good at predictions. Everyone knows
oh,
that.
Oh, yeah, I am famously very good at predictions. I let my heart sing on that one. If it's a draw, then I think Arsenal remain the tie. And I think that the momentum swing would actually affect them in a majorly positive way. So I'm going to say that that's how I'm going to call it for now.
Okay. All right. That leads us on to number one. And we're going to leave England. Some of you will be relieved to hear. And we're going to go to what I genuinely believe is the most exciting part of the end of the season, and it is the Serie A top four race. This is where it's at for me. There is nothing across Europe that can top this one. There may be no title race in Italy. Obviously, they've had this Napoli Scudetto party planned for a little while now. I've noticed, by the way, have you seen the videos of like Georgians have started flying in to Naples and they're putting on like extra flights from Tbilisi to Naples. So lots of Georgians are arriving in Naples over the next week or so in order to celebrate Kvara's achievement with Napoli,
really?
Which is genuinely lovely. Amazing. Probably should have been at the top of the show. But obviously it's all part of it. And that's Napoli. They're away. They're done. They're sorted. Just below them though, absolute bear pit. Incredible stuff. It's six teams for three Champions League spots, and there's a huge asterisk lying over the whole thing as well. So let's lay it out. Basically, Lazio have been exceptional recently, and they look really good value for second place.
They have been best of the rest, haven't they? I think it is quite clear to see at this point.
Yeah, and they're 5 points clear of Roma in third, who are 3 points clear of Milan in fourth. Inter, who many people picked as Scudetto favourites start the season, including myself, winless in five, lost to Monza at the weekend, fifth. Although they are looking good in the Champions League, although they play on the eve tonight when we record. So let's see about that one. We'll see. But looking good, looking good. Bit of a cup team, not much of a league team at the moment. Then you've got Atalanta and Juventus down in sixth and seventh. Now, Juventus, 15-point penalty. Appealed. What is going to happen?
Well, we'll find out the day this is released, right? So April the 19th. If you're listening to this on release date, then the hearing is set for today.
Okay. Wow. It affects so much. And one thing I'll point out before I talk about it any further, but like Max Allegri, obviously the manager of Juventus can't control the points deduction. He can only control like what his players have done on the pitch. And he continually references his players' performance on the pitch and their like position in the league table and their points tally as if the points deduction did not exist. Now,
well, he's just there like, we're third. And you're like, you're not third, G.
Yeah, he's trying to claim that they have way more points than they do and that they're in a different position. So, but, you know, if that points deduction was revoked, they'd shoot up to 59 points. Yeah. And they'd go third. They'd push Roma to fourth and they'd push AC Milan down to fifth. And, you know, as far as he's concerned, they have earned 59 points. That's their performance. And that's what he keeps saying. And it's kind of true.
He's correct about that. Yeah,
it's true. But he is ignoring the fact that as we speak, they don't actually have that many points. But if they suddenly shoot up into third, first of all, they start to put a little bit more pressure on Lazio above them. But they push Roma into fourth, still in the Europa League. They push AC Milan down into fifth. They push Inter all the way down to sixth. And it hurts Atalanta as well, down to seventh. Half of these teams are still in Europe, which further complicates everything. You know, squad rotations, fitness, priorities. This is absolutely fascinating for me.
Yeah, it is really interesting. It's really, really interesting. And this hearing is going to be one of this. Also, in regard to the hearing, I believe that they cannot reduce it. So they can't make it a 7-point penalty. It's either all or nothing. They can either confirm or completely revoke this 15-point penalty. So either Juventus are jumping up to 59 points or they are staying on 44. That's where we're at. There's going to be no, all right, have half the points back, lads. Yeah. You know, gear up.
Up to 51, level with Inter. So, yeah, that sort of thing.
So there's none of that. It's all or nothing in that regard, which makes it incredibly interesting. And then, you know, you look at how this pans out. And as we say, Napoli, I think, are done at the top, even if they have had a little wobble of late. They're 14 points clear with eight games to go. It would involve an absolutely unprecedented collapse, even for Napoli standards, to drop the title from here. And I think they'll be fine. Although their next game is against Juventus. If Juve have clawed themselves back, if the penalty is revoked, then maybe Juve will be looking at going, we've done weird things before, we'll do it again. but we shall see. I think it's done enough. But you actually look at the fixtures between the rest of the teams in this scrap, and it's really, really interesting. Roma in particular, it have an absolutely horrendous run in their next six or seven. Actually, to be honest, all the way to the end of the season. They have their second leg against Feyenoord this week. Then they have Atalanta away. Then they have Milan at home. They have Monza away. Then Inter at home. They have Bologna away, who've been in absolutely cracking form. Salernitana at home. Then Fiorentina away, again, in excellent form. And Spezia at home on the final day. That is a horrendous run in for Roma. And you know, you go and look at Milan and Inter's, and it's not much, you know, it's not much different. You know, they have, obviously, Roma. They have Lazio. They have Juve. They have Verona, who are scrapping for their lives. And Inter have Lazio, they have Roma, they have Napoli, they have Atalanta. They have Juve in the Coppa Italia as well, which is kind of a separate issue going on in a separate... It's just everyone is playing everyone. And it's, as you say, Sam, I think you nailed it with your first point. It's a bear pit.
Absolutely. It's really fascinating. And the stakes as well for some of these clubs... through the roof. I mean, Roma and Lazio have been absent from the Champions League for much too long. Much too long for me. Two of Italy's like esteemed great clubs from the capital, and they just haven't been on that stage. Inter, like, obviously the Champions League revenue, if they get through to the semi-final and stuff, like, very helpful. But we're continually told that Inter financially are in trouble. And every summer they get to, they have to sell a prime player. They lose a player they don't want to lose. What happens if they fail to qualify for the Champions League, you know, and lose that revenue? And then Milan, having made like progressively good steps over the last couple of seasons, getting back into the Champions League, winning the title, getting to the knockout stage of the Champions League for the first time in a decade or so. What happens if they drop out? Like, what does that do to the project? What does that mean for that, all that progress that they've made year by year? There's so much at stake here. It's absolutely incredible.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's going to be really, really intriguing towards the end of the season in Italy. I agree with you, Sam. I would have had this top of the list of all the things left in this season. It's just so, so exciting.
So, how's it finish?
I reckon Napoli predicts
Juventus' appeal. No,
I reckon Napoli win the league.
Do you? Yes,
Napoli. Hey, I've been saying that. I'm the only person in the world who's been saying that since Dom this season. So there you have it.
If Juventus' appeal is upheld and they're given their points back and they vault up to 59, do you think that they will ride the wave to the end of the season and stay in the top four?
Yes.
Yes.
I do too. Do you think Lazio can be overhauled in second place?
No.
Yes.
I don't think they can either.
No, I think Lazio finished second, full stop.
Well, if Juve go on to 59 points, they're only 2 points behind them. Can they then catch them?
Yeah, but Juve in their last two games have lost to Sassuolo, and where they were absolutely...
No, I know, but I just think, like, imagine the boost you'd get of getting suddenly 15 points back in the bag and then being like, right, go on then.
Yeah. Napoli turn up at the weekend in Turin after being knocked out unceremoniously of the Champions League by Milan defending for a 0-0, and they turn it on and score five goals, I am worried for Juve's sanity.
Juve have got Napoli and Inter next, so it's big fixtures. But I would actually back them to do it.
I genuinely think if Juve's points appeal goes through and they get the 15 points back, they will finish in the top four, but I think they will finish fourth.
I think they'll go third. I think it dumps Roma and Milan down one. I don't think Inter have got it in them. They just look too bad in the league. And if there's something to cling on to here, it's that Roma at home tend to be very strong. they tend to win, and they tend to win with a clean sheet. Like, they're very reliable at knocking those out. And that's probably what I'd hang on to there over the something like AC Milan, who are much more combustible, I think. So I think I'd go Napoli, Lazio, Juventus, and then Roma if Juve get the points back. Obviously, if Juve don't, Milan probably sneaking in fourth.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. I would pretty much agree with that, although I think that Roma will finish ahead of Juventus this season. Just with, as you say, that home record is so, so good. But with that, I think it's probably time for us to close this segment off. So thank you very much, Sam. That was wonderful. And there's lots to look forward to at the end of this season. After the break, we have Man of the Week and the Gibberish Rankings. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to Ranks FC. It's time for everybody's favourite part of the week. Dean Jones, the floor is yours.
It's time for Melon of the Week. This week's Melon of the Week is Bukayo Saka.
Oh, no.
No.
Sorry.
No.
You know I love him.
No.
You know I love him.
No.
I want the world for this guy. No. But unfortunately, he's just cost his team a league title.
No. No.
Dad, it was terrible.
Do you
it
remember
was terrible.
When I was talking about Lorenzo Pellegrini and the reaction to the penalty miss? Can we have a bit more Roma energy from you, please?
This is terrible news.
It's terrible news. He's cost me loads of points in fantasy and he's cost his team a league title, potentially. Like, he's a brilliant. He hasn't actually been brilliant the last four games, but we've talked before about, like, he's literally been in there every week. He can't perform every single week. And, like, I'm having to be ruthless here. And I'm like, okay, I've got to take this on surface value. Like, what have we seen here? We've seen the chance to win Arsenal a key game in a title race they weren't expected to win. There was pressure on him. Gabby Jesus even tried to help him by holding the ball, give him his space, give him his time to set up for what he was going to do. And he stuck it like 2 yards wide. He tried to stick it like top bins or whatever he was trying to do. Like, it's just really bad. It was just a really bad moment. And as much as I've, you know, was stuck up for Arsenal a minute ago, it is made on moments like this, and he'll be made on moments like this too. And I hope the team do rally around him. I hope the fans do rally around him, and that he, you know, bounces back from this against Southampton and bangs in a hat trick or something. We know he's got a strong frame of mind. You know, obviously missed a high profile penalty for England and Wembley, and he bounced back from that with form we didn't ever know that he would be able to produce, and he's absolutely great state of mind. Ah, man, this was melonish. He didn't need to go for a penalty.
I hate this,
and
I don't even care about the fact that he's got the ability to bounce back against Southampton and maybe score. Like, I don't care about that. What I really hate, Dean, is it's an England footballer who has now missed two really important penalties, and it just sends shivers down my spine, mate. You got the Euros one that you referenced. You got this one in a high pressure scenario. Can we just get some players that can do this outside of Harry Kane?
He literally,
please.
Like, this is the thing, isn't it? It's about mentality and doubting. Like, Kane is a mentality monster, like, for whatever you want to say. Like, most of the time, he missed the biggest one we've ever had.
He's missed our last penalty.
It wouldn't really matter. But, like, he has been so dependable apart from that one massive one.
And,
it's
there
just
were a couple,
none of
man.
Us have got it. None of us have got it.
No, it's true. It's true. I'm good at pens.
I didn't like doing that, lads. I'm Irish. I didn't like doing that.
I'll tell you what, there were a couple of ones. Ayhan Usu scored a 94th minute own goal equaliser in the Prague derby. We got sent by Bob at Legend as Dubse on Twitter.
Yeah.
That was pretty bad. A bit chaotic. Yeah. They were really in charge of that game until he decided to go. And I enjoyed this from Xavier Lynch, who tweeted us saying, Richard Keys, Melon of the Week. I'm just going to read you out Richard Keyes' tweet from this week. It was excellent. He said, I fail to see what Julian Nagelsmann knows that Frank Lampard doesn't. If it's a straight choice between the two, I'd go with the legend that knows Chelsea inside out, not someone who might have a more impressive PowerPoint display, but knows nothing about the club or our league.
Oh my God, I hadn't seen that.
Wasn't there another part of the conversation? He'd been on the whatever show he's on, and he was like, is it because he like rides a skateboard? Is that why he's more popular than Frank Lampard? He's like, no, it's because he's a proper football manager in that.
Yeah, have you watched Chelsea, mate? Have you watched Chelsea? Actually, the other contender I did consider was Luis Suarez, who took a disgraceful penalty
for Gremio. Yeah,
he is Gremio. He took a penalty for Gremio and stuck it way, way over the bar. But Gremio still won the game, so it wasn't quite as costly. It was a terrible penalty, though. It was worse than Saka's. So he's escaped that. Look, it's time for shout out of the week. This week's shout out of the week, and thanks to everyone who sent them, is Vincent. Vincent has done a ranking of Ranks FC and given us 5 stars. Bit of a long one. I have to rattle through it. He said, right, the first aspect is the evident love of our 3 hosts and what they do for each other. Jack, Dean and Sam are all extremely passionate about the sport and all in different ways to celebrate who they are and what they enjoy about this game. From Jack's love of niche storylines and good vibes, Sam's passion for restoring some order to chaos and whatever it is that Dean actually likes. Okay, I mean, seriously, who even is that guy? In all seriousness, Lampardian transition. The way different opinions are shared such that they represent not only their own personal take, but also that of the listeners keeps me looking forward to my Wednesday morning commutes. With these three, you get the full spectrum of football coverage. Speaking of, the second thing I love about this pod is the wide array of topics. The Premier League is naturally the big headline stories, but then the 5 top leagues also take time in each of the main midweek episodes. However, unlike any other football podcast I've listened to, they branch out to lesser known and definitely lesser spoken about leagues, players and stories that you didn't even know you wanted to hear about. Trust me, you do want to hear about it. I'm going to skip that bit. This is taking too long. I cannot begin to count how many conversations I've had with my mates as a direct result of this podcast. And for that, I'll take the opportunity to thank you three. This brings me to the third thing I love about this pod, and that is the gibberish. No, I don't mean their discussion of how good or bad a Captain Harry Maguire is. I mean the ranking of whatever gibberish is on their mind. My life would be measurably worse if it was not for these rankings and for this podcast that I've followed since its BR days. Thank you, thank you, thank you is basically what he says from there on out. Thank you. Long live Rank Squad. From Vincent. And I will say, like, that is a lovely message, Vincent.
Cheers, Vincent.
Thank you, Vincent.
You give some proper work on that, and I hope it does bring in some listeners when they go through the reviews. We also had one from Bulgaria, PHX. He sent in a few nice words. I wanted to say thanks. He reckons he might be our only listener in Bulgaria. And he's probably got a point. I can't think of anyone on Patreon that we've got. Sam might know more. That's in Bulgaria. Doesn't really ring a bell there, to be honest.
Ring a bell.
So that's interesting. And I do have one other thing to say, lad, before we move on to the gibberish. We're going to take a moment here for one of our loyal listeners, Michael, who did get in touch, and he just wants us to help him with something. He said, I want to offer a different sort of shout out of the week to a man called Steve Tuffer. Now, Steve was an ambulance paramedic and co-worker to my wife and I, who was stabbed and sadly murdered in the back of his ambulance while on duty on Friday morning in southwest Sydney. He was a genuinely good bloke and a friend to all, who leaves behind his newly wedded wife and 3 young children. We as paramedics go to work each morning with care and compassion in our foremind. We understand the apparent risk that we do not always get to go home safely each night, and that is the thing that scares us the most. Steve paid the ultimate price. This has been the 3rd emergency service death on active duty in the last 6 months in Australia. I don't know if Steve was a football fan, but I would have accepted him no matter which fan base or ultras group he belonged to. If the Rank Squad could do us a favour, the next time you're out for a pint or you're just having a quiet one at home, raise a glass to Steve and the legacy he leaves behind. Stay safe, everyone, and check in with the ones you love. The world can be an unforgiving place. This is my different suggestion for shout out of the week. Absolutely, Michael, like, thoughts with you. I messaged you separately on the back of it. Tough time for you. And yeah, just puts everything into context. Sometimes football is really meaningless in the context of the world, but we try to raise spirits as much as we can. But let's never forget that our mates are what really matters.
Indeed. It feels quite hard going into a gibberish after that, doesn't it?
I think Michael would like us to now lift the mood. I'm sorry, we'd like
to have to. Thank you, Michael. And we're honestly, all thoughts are with you and with Steve's family, of course, as well. I'm going to try and lift the mood. So here goes. It is time for our gibberish ranking, which Vincent obviously mentioned in his review. And I'm actually taking over today, lads. I'm taking some...
You don't get to do these very often.
I don't, but I've got a good one, I think, in that I would like to talk about my favourite golf clubs in my set. Okay. And also, I'm going to compare them to a footballer so that we can talk about them. So, in three is a hybrid five iron sort of thing that I have, which I call Auntie. His name is Auntie because I learned about a hybrid by playing with my aunt for the first time, and I was using her set of clubs, which are a women's set, and I was like, wow, the way I hit the ball is so poor that actually I play much better with a women's set of clubs. So what I did was I went out and bought my own version of this, but I didn't buy a women's version of it. I bought a men's version of it because I was like, well, it'll probably fit better. And it's just much worse than having the women's version of it. So I'm furious with myself about this fact. But I have learned how to play with this club. And last year, it was probably the best club in my set. Mm. So I'm going to call this club and compare it to Tammy Abraham. Because last year, this club was on fire. This year, I have not been able to hit the ball with my hybrid five until last week. Where last week, I suddenly found out how to hit the ball with the five again. I was like, wow, we're back. And just as Tammy Abraham came off the bench to score the third goal against Udinese at the weekend, I feel like this is the start of something special for me and the five hybrid going into the big stretch of the season. Now, some of you who follow me on social media will know that me and my brother play in a golf tournament that we created a couple of years back called RPI. It's a very, very important thing to us. Tom and I captained the first two teams in it and are still belong to those two teams. So it's a big thing. Tom's team has won one. My team has won one in the last 2 years. Voice Note Max, so some of you will know from the Patreon, also a big member of this RPR community. You can follow us on Instagram if you want. Royal Caravelle.
Hang on a minute. What's this?
It's an advert.
Yeah, it's an advert.
Hey, Dad.
But basically, the point is that I need to be back in form for RPI, which is in about 5 weeks' time.
All right.
Yeah.
And this five hybrid coming back into form for me at the right time feels very Tammy Abraham firing Roma into the Champions League. So that's where I'm going with that.
I like it.
Nice.
At number two here is my pitching wedge, which I know as Christopher Columbus. There's two reasons for this. One, the person that taught me how to use a pitching wedge was called Chris, and my godfather, and he showed me how to use it. The Columbus bit is because a lot of the time when I take my pitching wedge out, it feels like we're going on an adventure because I have absolutely no idea where the ball is going to go next. So sometimes we go straight for the dock, we're onto the green and everyone's having a good time. And sometimes I could be off the way in the woods, going to find things, you know, learning new things and exploring, really, the golf courses, the bits of golf courses that I think most people don't even really get to explore, which is pretty cool. So I feel like sometimes I'm exploring the new world. And that's why it's known as Christopher Columbus. The player I'm going to compare it to in this regard is Nicola Pepe. Now, there are moments of sublime class with me and my pitching wedge, especially when I'm around the green and it's just very small thing. But as soon as I have to try and do anything that's over about 50 yards, it all goes Pete Tong. It cannot get it to work. It just doesn't happen. And sometimes I do often feel like sending my pitching wedge out on loan and actually just bringing in a gap wedge or something to do a job while it's away. So Nicola Pepe, the pitching wedge. And my favorite club is my putter, which I know is Old Faithful because it's been with me for my entire golfing career. Now, in this time, the rest of my clubs have changed. My putter is the only thing that is the same from the original bag that I took from my dad that when he got a new set of clubs and he just gave me his old ones. The putter remains. So the Old Faithful there is my oldest club. It's also my best club. It's the club that I am most comfortable with. And a player that I'm going to compare my putter to is Ruben Neves. Because my putter from about anywhere over 10 yards, right? So as long as we're not actually trying to do something that's genuinely sensible, is on fire. Mm. I can putt from 40 yards. And I like more than anyone else I know will find a spot that looks pretty good. People are like, oh, wow, you're amazing. As soon as it gets in the box, right? As soon as I'm actually in a place where I should putt something home from, it's all over the place. It's only good from distance. So my putter is Ruben Neves.
I like it.
I mean, Ruben Neves actually isn't that good from distance either, mate.
Enough.
He takes a lot of shots, but not very many of them go in. I thought you were going to say Mark Noble.
The ones that do go in are spectacular. That's nice. Important. It's important to remember
yeah.
that
yeah,
when
yeah,
we're
yeah.
talking about these discussions.
Absolutely.
So yeah, there we have it. That's the gibberish rankings.
Very good.
My favourite golf clubs and the players that they represent.
Old Faithful.
Old Faithful.
Sounds more like a ship.
Yeah.
Or it'd be my aftershave.
I think that is, and I think it's also a drink, isn't it?
Yeah. So. It does. But yeah, don't drink aftershave.
Don't drink aftershave. World life advice from us here at Ranks FC. And on that bombshell, I think it's probably time for us to call it a day. So all that's left for me to do is to say thank you so much to Sam Ty, the Rank God.
Cheers, buddy.
Thank you so much to our transfer guru, Mr. Dean Jones.
Cheers, mate.
I've been Jack Collins, Knave of Hearts. This has been Ranks FC. Thank you so much for tuning in as ever. We will be back on Wednesday night/Thursday morning, I should say, with our Champions League review show. So make sure you're tuned into that. We'll be looking at the teams who have made it into the semi-finals and what went down in the Champions League this week. There will be Champions League previews and Europa League shows on our YouTube channel. If you fancy going over there. And of course, a spotlight as well on our Patreon. The link, as ever, is in the description if you fancy coming and joining us over on Patreon for two extra shows a week. Thank you so much for tuning in to Ranks FC today, and we will see you very shortly. Take it easy, gang. Peace.
Are you struggling to lower your bad LDL cholesterol, even though you may be taking a statin, swapping steaks for salads, and exercising while listening to this podcast? Ask your doctor if Repatha Evolocumab is right for you. With Repatha, you can dramatically reduce bad cholesterol and the risk of another heart attack while enjoying life too, because you're human. And with convenient self-administration, you can take Repatha in the comfort of your own home. Do not take Repatha if you're allergic to it. Repatha can cause serious allergic reactions. Signs include trouble breathing or swallowing, or swelling of the face. Most common side effects include runny nose, sore throat, common cold symptoms, flu or flu-like symptoms, back pain, high blood sugar and redness, pain, or bruising at the injection site. Visit Repatha.com or call 1-844-REPATHA. Talk to your doctor today about Repatha.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.